Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
All my bags are packed. I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye.
Okay.
Clearly, you haven't seen Armageddon.
Yeah, I have. I just try to put it out of my head.
Well, that song's in it. Oh. And we're going to be talking about asteroids and preventing a collision with Earth and what sort of tech would be involved with that. And this comes courtesy of some Facebook requests and email requests. I can't believe that we had people send us, multiple people sent us this request, which seems really specific for more than one person. But hey, we're going to do it.
Okay.
And, you know, if you have seen the documentary Armageddon, you remember that we shot Bruce Willis up into space with Ben Affleck and some other folks like Steve Buscemi to scare an asteroid out of the way because Steve Buscemi's a scary guy. I think I might be a little off track. Oh, well, anyway, the premise of the movie was that there was this enormous asteroid the size of Texas, which, by the way, not that kind. That's a reference that goes over everyone's head because none of our listeners have ever played the game Asteroid.
What?
So anyway,
surely some of you have played Asteroids.
Maybe. Maybe our buddy Floyd, the truck driver, he might have.
Hopefully not while driving.
I hope not. Anyway, we're getting off track already. So the whole premise of the movie is that there's this giant asteroid the size of Texas that's going to be flying at Earth. And so they come up with this idea where they scramble a bunch of miners, essentially, to shoot up into space, land on the asteroid, and plant a nuclear device on the asteroid that will blow it up to tiny little bits and save the Earth. And so we want to address this first. So let's get this out of the way. That would not work.
No.
That would be a bad thing. First of all, the power of such a device is hard to imagine. How would you create a nuclear device powerful enough to explode Texas into tiny bits? The equivalent of Texas flying at you. Also, by the way, an asteroid that size would pretty much wipe out everybody. You know, when we talk about asteroids that are dangerous enough to wipe out a city, 50 yards is big enough. A 50-yard asteroid, like an asteroid 50 yards across, would be have enough power, enough force to destroy a city if it impacted the city. Now, NASA classifies Earth-threatening asteroids as being 140 meters or larger.
Mm-hmm.
But then that conveniently is about the size that we can detect them.
Well, it's important to note, too, that it's happened before.
You know,
we have been hit with many space objects in the past, and I assume to some small degree continue to do so. It's not like something that we hear about in the news every day, but
every single day the Earth is hit by tiny little object. Granted, we haven't been hit by a massive asteroid in a really long time, but meteorites hit the Earth every day. Sometimes they're so small that, you know, they're almost undetectable, but it does happen. They've happened in the past. I mean, that's what wiped out the dinosaurs, was an asteroid impact, or possibly comet impact, but it was a massive impact that altered the Earth's climate, and dinosaurs did not have air conditioning, so they were pretty much doomed. Doomed!
I figured it was their debaucherous lifestyle, and it was unsustainable.
No, you're thinking of Rome.
Right. You know, I get this confused a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, if you've ever seen a T-Rex in a toga, never mind. So why would this plan not work with destroying an asteroid with a nuclear device? Let's assume that for argument's sake, that somehow you managed to find a nuclear device capable of breaking up a Texas-sized asteroid while it was hurtling toward Earth. And keep in mind, this asteroid was close to Earth by the time it blows up. Otherwise, it's not nearly as dramatic an ending.
Right, of course.
You got to have it close enough to the Earth where people are starting to really freak out.
Oh, and how long exactly did they have to prepare for this?
No, it was like a couple of days or something like that. It was crazy short time period.
We would know.
Yeah, anything that size, we would be able to spot between Mars and Jupiter, giving us years, literally years, to prepare.
Yeah.
It would not be a last minute thing. And that's one of the myths that movies perpetuate, is that, you know, you have some amateur astronomer out in the middle of nowhere just looking up and saying, huh, that's weird, that star wasn't there yesterday. And then that information slowly filters its way to some official source, which immediately clamps down and keeps it all secret so that nobody knows that doom is on the way until it leaks to the media, causing a panic. Yeah,
we don't want to cause a panic.
That's definitely Hollywood related. So why would blowing up the asteroid not be a good idea? Well, that asteroid's moving at a really fast speed, and the nuclear warhead is not going to slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've still got this material moving at an incredible speed, and the mass isn't gone. You haven't destroyed the mass. You've just spread it out some. So instead of it being one massive asteroid hitting the Earth, it's a whole bunch of them hitting the Earth. And it's like the difference between getting hit by a slug and getting hit by shotgun shot. You know, you just spread out the area of impact is what you've done.
This is Mission Control. We just wanted to say, oops.
Yeah. Our bad. So, here's why this stuff would really work in the real world. All right. We've got lots of powerful telescopes pointing in all sorts of directions now. So the myth of the amateur astronomer who detects, something the size that's depicted in Armageddon is really, that's busted. Because it would be detected by much more powerful telescopes much earlier. And that information would go to it's kind of a clearinghouse for near-Earth objects that could potentially cause harm. It's called the Minor Planet Center. It's in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Hmm.
Now, the Minor Planet Center would then take the information that was sent to it, which usually would involve the size of the asteroid and its shape of orbit around the sun and whether that orbit could potentially collide with the Earth, send that information out to observatories all across the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these observatories would then train their telescopes onto the object to try and make their own calculations based upon their own perspective to see if perhaps this would be a quote-unquote interesting object.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in astronomical terms, interesting means, holy crap, we're all going to die. That's what they mean by interesting, as in potentially impact the Earth interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that information would then be shared amongst those observatories. And the likelihood of a clampdown is really low just because you have so many people who would be involved in this and have the information. And lots of them are going to talk. A lot of them are going to talk and say, we got to prepare now because if we don't, we're all going to die. Or a significant number of people are going to die. Because if this asteroid hits a landmass, then it's going to be like, depending on the size of the asteroid, it could be like the entire world's nuclear arsenal exploding in a single point. If it hits the ocean, then it could generate a tsunami of unprecedented force that could wipe out an entire coast of a continent. So, I mean, this is serious business. Fortunately, we haven't discovered anything so far that would cause that much of a problem. But again, our ability to detect these objects is limited. Most of the objects that NASA concentrates on is anything that's 140 meters or across or larger.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that smaller objects could cause significant harm, but finding those objects is a lot trickier because space is big.
Really?
Yeah. And in relation to space, 50-yard across asteroid is nothing.
Yeah.
It's impossible to exaggerate how tiny that is.
It's like a bug.
Yeah.
Smaller than a bug.
It's like a germ on a bug. and you happen to be like a blue whale. That's kind of, and even then, that's not even close.
That is, yeah.
I can't get my mind around it. That's how it is. So all right. So nuking an asteroid directly, as in trying to blow it up, is not a feasible option.
No.
So let's assume for the moment that we have developed technology that helps us, that has improved our ability to detect asteroids to the point where any asteroid that could potentially cause significant harm to people on Earth, to life on Earth, that we have somehow managed to create the technology to detect it.
Yeah.
And it's
important to do so because it is probable that we will be hit by something large-ish again.
Yeah.
At some point.
Essentially, like,
so it's worthwhile to develop this technology.
Exactly. So, yeah, the risk might be low, but the impact would be huge. So, even taking a low risk perspective of it, the actual impact would be so enormous that it is a good argument. And a lot of people have made this argument to invest in technology to help prevent it from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So let's assume that we have improved technology so we can actually detect these asteroids from a pretty good distance. Like I said, it might be years before they get here.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to need that time because we're going to need that time to develop the actual vehicles, the tools that we're going to use in order to intercept that asteroid. So by intercepting it, what could we do to avoid a collision? Well, the real key is deflecting the asteroid.
Yep.
You just have to move it a tiny bit, especially the further out you go. The further out you go, the tinier that adjustment needs to be, because by the time it gets to the Earth, it's going to be the distance is going to be much more enormous.
Yeah.
You know, just think about, like, you're walking to have a friend standing across from you across a football field, and you're both facing each other exactly. Now, imagine that your friend just turns slightly a little bit to the left and starts walking forward. Well, from a distance, it looks like that your friend may actually meet up with you once they get all the way across the football field. But as they continue, you see that they're getting further and further away until they reach essentially a point parallel to you, and they are a good distance from you, right? They're further down the field, like further to the right or to the left, whichever way the person turned. That's kind of the idea here, is that if you can catch an asteroid early enough and deflect it just a couple of degrees, then you've solved the problem because it's going to miss the Earth by millions of miles. But how do you deflect it? Well, there's a lot of different options.
Yeah, I read two specifically that seem to be the options people are thinking of most likely.
What's that?
One of them, ironically enough, was to use nuclear devices.
Yes, but
not to destroy, but to nudge.
Right. Yeah. The idea is being that you would detonate the device over the asteroid. This would actually cause a couple of things to happen, and it's, you know, it's interesting that that we're talking about something. You know, you might say, well, hey, you just said nuking is bad. Well, in this case, what would happen is that you would create a nuclear radiation would create this this vaporizing energy. It would vaporize the surface or a section of the surface of the asteroid. Now, that's going to cause that part of the surface to eject material into space. And, you know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So that ejection from space is actually going to act as a pushing force on the asteroid. And it's tiny, but that's all you need. You know, that might be all you need to move that asteroid out of the pathway of the Earth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're just using it, again, to give the asteroid a little push. Actually, most of the options I've seen are some variation on pushing the asteroid. It's just lots of different potential ways we could do that.
Well, that's true. I did read, to be fair, I did read of the possibility of using an inert device, nothing that explodes, but basically a bullet, if you will, to shove.
Yeah, using kinetic force to push the asteroid out of the way. Yeah, that is another potential solution. Although it's again one of those that has its own set of difficulties. But that is one I've also heard where you're just using a kinetic force to tap the asteroid out of the way.
And it's important to note that we really can't stress how much detection and identifying the object's path, how important that is, because there's an effect called the Yarkovsky effect. Did you read about this?
No.
As the object gets closer to the sun, and I'm not talking about directly on a path to, but, you know, as it gets closer and closer to the sun in the center of our solar system, it's going to heat up. Mm-hmm. And for a larger object, it doesn't matter so much. According to an article that I read, the Yarkovsky effect basically means that once the object starts to heat up, the heat can affect its path. It can basically start it to move in a slightly different direction. So you need to be able to, we would need to be able to know exactly where the, or as at least as close enough to where the object is going to be so that we can accurately hit it with something if we're going to try to use a brute force method of moving the asteroid out of the way.
And a lot of the attempts to move asteroids may depend upon the sunlight, mm-hmm. and the sun's power, because there are a lot of different options that would harness the power of the sun in order to create a pulling effect or pushing effect on the asteroid. For example, there's one possible technique where we would coat the asteroid with white and dark coating, like paint or dust or whatever, mm-hmm. and that would cause it to move because the sun's energy would actually push against the asteroid. Mm-hmm. And if we coated the correct side, I mean, there's no real right or left, but the correct side of the asteroid, it could push the asteroid those couple of degrees. By the time it gets to where the Earth is, it's millions of miles away. You know, it's millions of miles off course from hitting the Earth. Similarly, there were suggestions that maybe we could create a solar sail that would attach. We would use a probe to attach a solar sail to an asteroid, and the solar sail would catch the sun's energy and be propelled by the solar wind, essentially, to pull the asteroid again outside of its pathway. That's kind of a far-fetched one, really. I mean, it's definitely a lot more challenging than, say, coating an asteroid with a light-colored material. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the idea of using a net, an enormous net, to encapsulate the asteroid. And the net would, again, act as almost like a solar sail. It would react against, you know, the sun's energy would push against the net, which again would alter the course of the asteroid.
Mm-hmm.
Mirrors are another potential, solution where you launch a device that is going to deploy mirrors around the asteroid to direct sunlight to specific points on the asteroid to, again, push it out of the way.
Well, everyone knows that asteroids are vain. So if you put the mirrors on the far side of the Earth, they'll go toward the mirrors and go, oh, which is my best side.
I look good. But then there are a couple of other elements. There are a couple of other ways of nudging an asteroid out of the way that don't involve sunlight at all.
Okay.
And one of them's strapping a rocket to it.
Ah.
So essentially you have a,
do we have to land somebody on the asteroid?
No, not necessarily. You'd have to have some sort of remotely operated probe that could embed into the asteroid itself and then have enough fuel in it to be able to push as a rocket to push the asteroid out of the way of the pathway of collision.
Mm.
Now, it doesn't have to push very hard. It doesn't have to push for very long again, as long as you catch the asteroid early enough. That we have to keep stressing that. This is assuming that we detect the asteroid years and years and years in advance and that we're able to react quickly enough so that by the time the probe reaches the asteroid, because you remember, this isn't going to be overnight. It's going to take time for whatever solution we deploy to get to the asteroid.
Right.
Like it may be, we launch something and we don't know if it's going to work for another 2 years or 3 years. I mean, that's kind of scary to think about, but that's true.
Yeah.
So, you have to figure out a way where you have this device and it has to be able to carry enough fuel so that it can actually deploy properly. A lot of people suggest that this kind of approach would be best if it were already spaceborne. So mm-hmm. In other words, we already had some sort of launching platform in space so that the individual probes would not need so much fuel to both escape the Earth's gravity and land on an asteroid and then propel it away. That does pose a problem. But then another one is the gravity tractor.
Yes. And I when I looked up the gravity tractor, I had to check just a moment ago. And yes, someone has named their band Gravity Tractor. Good for them.
Yeah. Lead singer, John Deere.
Nice.
Thank you.
The gravity tractor is fascinating because this is essentially using a different body, the gravity of another body, a body that we would launch into space to pull the asteroid away without even, the point here is not even to touch the asteroid. It's to get something near enough to it to affect the asteroid's path with another gravitational field.
Right, because you got to remember, everything in the universe exerts a gravitational pull on everything else. It's just that that pull is dependent upon distance and mass and lots of other stuff. So if you were able to put a massive enough object close enough to the asteroid, you could alter its pathway. There are some problems with the gravity tractor.
Really?
Yeah. One of them is that you have to figure out, all right, well, you want the gravity tractor to pull the asteroid away from the path of collision. You don't want the asteroid to pull the gravity tractor into the path of collision.
Yeah.
So that means that you would have to have some sort of propulsion system aboard the gravity tractor to make little course corrections and continue to gently pull the asteroid out of its pathway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have propulsion, then there's the possibility that propulsion that you're going to, when you fire your rockets to give it a boost, that force may push against the asteroid, thus negating the gravity pull that you are exerting upon it. So essentially you're getting a net zero result because you're pulling on it with gravity, but you're pushing on it with your propulsion system. So finding a way where you could create some sort of gravity tractor where the propulsion system would not actually push against the asteroid itself would be part of the solution. Plus, this would be really, really expensive. It's a much more costly approach and not necessarily the most easy to implement compared to other approaches. So I don't know that this is necessarily likely to happen. I mean, if enough research goes into it where it proves that this is the most effective way, then sure, I could see it happening just because people would finally say, all right, well, we have to invest in it because we can't We can't just play roulette all our existence. We have to prepare for this.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine that we'd probably go with some other route before we tried this one.
Yeah. An article I read suggested that the gravity tractor would have to be at least 20 tons in order to safely tow, you know, effectively tow, I should say, not safely, effectively tow an asteroid away from the Earth. And I can't, I just imagine that's going to be very hard to get out of the Earth's orbit. I mean, you know, our gravity, I'm sorry, to leave the gravitational field of the Earth to launch something that big into space. But, you know, I'm not a rocket scientist, so.
Nor are you a brain surgeon.
No, I'm not a rocket surgeon either.
So, well, that's good. I could just imagine that going wrong. So I've got another potential, although it's a far-fetched possibility of getting rid of an asteroid that's coming at you.
Yeah.
You let robots eat it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Robert Lamb actually wrote about this. He has a great article on our Discovery News site
mm-hmm.
called Top 10 Ways to Stop an Asteroid. And one of them is talking about using robots that would actually essentially kind of chew up the asteroid and then out the tiny bits of asteroid into space electromagnetically and essentially disperse the asteroid while it's still really, really, really far away from the Earth. Because keep in mind, if it's really far away from the Earth, then not all of that mass is going to hit the Earth the way it would in the beginning of at the end of Armageddon, rather. So, yeah, these robots eat and poop. They eat asteroids and they poop asteroid dust.
I wanted to go there and I said, no, I'm not going to say it.
You're not going to say they eat and poop?
Nope, but you did it for me. So
yeah, well, I could
okay
see the
that.
Look on your face and I knew that you were thinking that. So I was like, I'm going to do it. Well, I wanted to recommend. So this is definitely something that we need to think about. I mean, it's true that we need to think about and invest in it. There are some talks about private companies actually investing in this sort of technology, this sort of approach, which is kind of cool that, you know, it's not just depending upon governmental agencies that have lots of different, you know, things pulling on them.
Yeah. I did read that scientists don't seem to believe that there's anything likely to hit us in the next 100 years or so at the earliest.
Well, at least nothing that we can see.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's still the possibility that something smaller could hit and still cause massive damage. It's just not going to necessarily cause global damage, but it could cause catastrophic local damage.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There's some interesting organizations out there that are dedicated to trying to fix this problem. There's one called the B612 Foundation. And their goal is to have a workable solution by 2015. So
okay.
That's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah.
If you guys want to learn more about the topic, well, I can recommend a couple things. At How Stuff Works, we actually have two articles that go into more detail about the stuff we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
One is called Could We Really Blow Up an Incoming Asteroid with a Nuclear Bomb? And one is called Could We Stop an Asteroid on a Collision Course Toward the Earth? And also, there's a great program that aired on Discovery called Bad Universe. And it's hosted by Phil Plait, the bad astronomer.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Plait, by the way, one of my favorite bloggers and scientists out there, because he's one of those scientists who really dedicates his work to explaining science to the layman in terms that are easy to understand. It makes science fun and exciting, and he does not shy away from topics like this where, you know, he's like, yeah, it'll kill you. So that's why we got to fix it. So he's very matter of fact about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really intelligent guy, very entertaining guy. So if you have not read his stuff or watched his show, I do recommend trying to catch that because he's a great guy. And he also has a really amusing Twitter feed, and he interacts with a lot of other Twitter Weisenheimers out there, like Jonathan Colton, Paul and Storm, you know, Will Wheaton. There's this kind of Twitterati that have formed up, and so he often will chat with those folks in interesting and entertaining ways, and he shares a lot of really cool science news through his Twitter feed as well.
Yeah,
I showed you that amazing photo of the space shuttle Endeavour across the sun.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, that was courtesy of Mr. Phil Plait. So yeah, he's written extensively about this, and he's talked about it in his blogs and on the show Bad Universe. So I recommend that as well. And well, I don't have any other potential solutions off the top of my head. Do you have anything else you want to add before we conclude?
Not in particular, no.
Well then, I would suggest we all just take a moment to ridicule the documentary Armageddon. For its portrayal of how we would alter the course of an asteroid by blowing it up real good, Texas style.
But you have to land a space shuttle on it first.
Yeah, and you have to sing the song I quoted at the beginning at some point, and Bruce Willis has to die.
Yeah.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah. I was interested in though that scientists are also talking about the possibility of mining asteroids.
When, sure. Yeah.
In an attempt to understand them better. I did read that, although we may not necessarily be ready to destroy one just yet, that scientists.
Or even alter its path.
Right, right. But scientists are considering the possibility since they are tracking some asteroids that are coming near to Earth and near, and again, space is big, so near is a relative term. But they're talking about the idea of visiting some near Earth asteroids with the possibility of mining, taking some samples of the rocks that are there on the asteroid to get a better understanding of elements in the universe and bringing them back to Earth, which is a really cool idea. I don't imagine they would send people to do that. So the idea of doing the complex calculation necessary to hit a moving object, you know, that's coming around, take samples and then return to Earth. That's really fascinating stuff. And that's not exactly the same topic, but I think it's a really cool application of science, and hope that if they can do that it will be fruitful and we'll learn a lot from it.
Yeah. And asteroid mining may actually lead to other things as well. Like, for example, if we find an asteroid that has ice deposits on it, that could be a way of finding not just water, but actually generating oxygen for other space, missions. So the asteroid mining is one of those other things. We could probably do a full episode about asteroid mining as well, just because there's so many other possible applications for it.
That would be fun.
Yep, I agree. So let us wrap this one up. Guys, if you have any topics you want us to cover, there's something that's got an asteroid heading straight for your brain and you want us to nudge it out of the way, let us know. You can send us a message on email. The address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or you can let us know on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle there is techstuff, HSW. Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.